This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Well, bringing you all the up-to-date information on sexual health and well-being. Brought to you by the Victorian AIDS Council on Joy 94.9.
Joy. Good evening. This is Well on Joy 94.9, presented to you every week by the Victorian AIDS Council as we talk about health and well-being in our gender, sex and sexually diverse community. I'm Adam and I'm joined this week by my co-host Jack. How are you going tonight, Jack?
I'm very well, thank you, Adam.
Straight off the bat, I get a screw up.
No, you're fine. I've just got my post-midsummer cough.
From
standing on that on the grounds near the Yarra.
It was a hectic day. How'd you find midsummer this year?
No, it was good. It was busy. I was surprised how many people turned up. I thought it was a good crowd. The weather was perfect, so that would be...
The weather was beautiful. Last year was absolutely abhorrent. So I'm glad that it sort of went the way of like a nice 23.
That's right. But it felt a little bit hotter under the tent, didn't it?
It did feel. But hopefully you came along to the VAC tent. The VAC tent, got yourself a fan, got yourself a singlet, engaged with us, followed us on Instagram, and basically just engage with what we do as an organisation.
That's right.
And basically the services we provide, because we love engaging with people at Carnival. It's one of the best days of the year. Everybody really gets into the spirit. And everyone's like, happy midsummer.
And it was a long day. An even longer night for some.
That indeed it was.
So, Adam, what's on the show tonight, please?
So on tonight's show, we will chat with Elise Vella from Women's Health West about all things happening out west. Maybe not all things, but a couple of interesting things. And one interesting project in particular that's sort of relevant to the GLBTI community. But if people want to get in contact, how can they?
They can email us right here on air at joy.org.au. or send us an SMS, 0427JOY949, both of which come to us straight into this very studio, Adam.
And we do love to hear from our listeners, so if you've got any questions either about the show or you've got any suggestions or you actually want to talk to our guests, just SMS.
Talk to us.
Or email us and we get it right here. We'll read it out on air, depending on what language you use.
Yes, keep it nice.
But yes, we can rephrase and all of the questions will be answered. And if we don't have time to answer them, we can always post them on our Facebook.
We can, we do.
Exactly. This is Well on Joy 94.9, and we are joined in the studio by Elise Vella from Women's Health West. Welcome, Elise. How are you?
I am well. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely no problems. So, Elise, I guess before we get into the reason that we've got you on the radio tonight, can you share with the listener a little bit about yourself and what you do work-wise?
Yeah, okay. So a bit about me. I work as a health promotion worker at Women's Health West in Footscray, and I work mostly on sexual and reproductive health related projects. I work in the West. I live in the West. I love the Western suburbs a lot, even though a lot of people don't.
Do you go for the Western Bulldogs?
I go for the Sydney Swans. That was a tough time.
South Melbourne.
Grand final. I had to get into the spirit. So, and I love coffee, as all Melbourneians do. I love Seinfeld, and I love RuPaul.
Well,
I had to mention RuPaul.
Absolutely. Drag Race being kind of like inconsequential to absolutely no one, because it's important to everyone.
Sure.
So one of the things that I came across when I was actually sort of having a bit of an investigation into Women's Health West was the Action for Equity strategy.
Yeah.
And it was actually kind of really interesting because it was really diverse and it's a really sort of diverse portfolio. Mm. Can you explain to us a little bit about what that is and how that embodies the organisation that you work for?
Sure. So Action for Equity is a sexual and reproductive health strategy for the western region of Melbourne, in a nutshell. Women's Health West are the lead agency on the strategy, and we work really closely with about 17 formal partners on the strategy.
Ouch.
Yeah, So lots of working group meetings to be had.
Lots of meetings.
Yes, yes. But I guess the overall aim of the strategy is, yeah, to have a regional approach to the way we look at sexual and reproductive health in the West. And each one of those partners brings something quite unique and a really unique skill set to a range of different programs and initiatives that we have. So all of my work sits within Action for Equity.
So is it very collaborative in nature in terms of we're working with different types of populations per se, or is it specific projects and you want to get everybody's opinion on a project, or a combination of all of the above?
Tick, all of the above. So we work with different range of partners. So local government sit on quite a lot of our initiatives through Action for Equity. We work with community health services. We work with statewide services, Aboriginal controlled health services. And in terms of population groups, quite diverse. We do a lot of work with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander community. We do stuff with young people. And a lot of my work sits within a school setting. So lots of work with young people there. We do professional development with GPs, with nurses. And one of the projects that I'm going to be talking to later, we're hoping to do a bit more work with men who have sex with men.
Goodness, you're broadening out. So when you talk about women's health, it's heterosexual, it's lesbian women's health, it's the broad brush.
It's the umbrella, yes. Yeah. Yep. We work with women, all shapes and sizes, all and identities, all demographics, exactly. But yeah, primarily women and children that live, that work, that recreate in the West, the Western
and
region.
Under this strategy, what are some of the key points of the strategy to engage people and to get some outcomes?
Yeah, so, well, I could probably talk to some of the stuff that I'm working on in particular, but we're looking to try and address some of the, I guess, poor health outcomes that we're seeing around rates of STIs, around teenage fertility, around poor presentation for Pap screening, and I guess the complexities with that come with all of that. But it's also about gender equity and creating an equitable space to have these discussions and to normalise the discussion of sexual health and reproductive health.
And I guess it's possible you'd have cultural barriers in some instances.
Most definitely, yeah. And the Western region is quite diverse and quite a unique region of Victoria, so there's lots of complexities and things to deal with there.
How west are we going?
How west?
Are we still in metropolitan Melbourne area, or are we sort of outside of Melbourne heading towards, I don't know, what's west?
What's the furthest city that you know in the west? So our boundaries, we do work in the city of Melbourne as well, but our furthest boundaries would be city of Melton and Wyndham.
Yes. And how long have you actually been in the role?
I've been in my role for about 15 months, so I can't really call it a new job anymore. I'm well and truly settled.
No, just fresh. You're fresh.
I'm fresh.
That's right.
And enthusiastic.
Bringing new concepts and new ideas. Yeah.
That's the hope.
Yeah. Exactly. Joy 94.9. And this is Well on Joy 94.9. And we're chatting with Elise Vella. What is Hella with me today? I have no idea. I'm off the charts. My apologies. So we're talking about Women's Health West and the diversity of projects and populations that you're actually engaging with in terms of sexual and reproductive health. But what initially got you in, I guess, excited about sexual and reproductive health? Because it's got a sexy name and a bit of a catchy name, but then when you get down to the pragmatics of it, it's quite intricate, it's quite complicated. So
yeah.
What do you
know?
And you're such a young woman.
I'm reasonably
very young.
I don't fit into the young person category anymore,
don't you?
But I fake it.
Okay.
Do I make it?
You're doing a very good job.
Oh, thank you. What got me into sexual and reproductive health? To be perfectly honest with you, I just sort of fell into it initially. I did a science degree. I majored in immunology. And come sort of halfway through third year, I thought, oh, I don't really want to work in a lab. What have I done? Had a bit of a crisis. Thought that was it. I'm going to have to go and do teaching or something. And then came across some really interesting honours projects at the Burnett Institute in their population health team. So worked on a really interesting honours project looking at sexual risk practice among men who have sex with men who also self-identify as sex workers.
Mm-hmm.
So as a young, naive 20-year-old, that was very eye-opening. And I guess really sort of sparked my interest in HIV, bloodborne viruses, but the social aspects of all of that as well. And then, yeah, I've sort of been working in sexual health ever since. I've done a little bit around drug and alcohol use, and I guess the interplay with all of that. But, yeah.
So, well, tell us about the I guess, before we get into kind of the MSM area that we're sort of heading down the path towards, the work that you did with the Burnett around male sex workers.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about the research that you did for your honours?
Sure. It'll be stretching the memory a little bit, but I'll give it a go. Yeah, so the aim of that honours project was to look at testing frequency and sexual risk behaviour among this certain subgroup of MSM, but also to compare it to quote-unquote mainstream MSM, to look at, yeah, differences in testing and rates of STIs. And from what I can recall, it was quite comparable between the two groups. But what I felt really interesting was the qualitative side of that. So I got to actually sit down and chat with men who self-identified as sex workers and to sort of get into the nitty-gritty around sexual identity, the interplay between sex work and substance use, and, yeah, the real complexities around that and sort of the chicken and the egg situation with substance use and sex work. And as I said before, yeah, as a naive 20-year-old sort of launching into this, it was so eye-opening. And that project led to some other really interesting work with sex work communities.
Male sex work communities?
Or, yes, yeah. and women as well. Okay. We also did some work around the needs of predominantly female sex workers in the St Kilda area. It was a project that we did with the City of Port Phillip. And that was really great as well. But in addition to that, also did some work with young people and the GLBTIQ community more broadly. So,
goodness, yeah. But you said you fell into it. You fell into it in a big way, didn't you?
I fell right down that hole.
Important area.
Yeah.
And I guess it's one of those things that you really do take on board because you're kind of like a little bit of a sponge at that age where you're like, wow, this is a whole new world. I'm not familiar with any of this whatsoever. So you really go into it either one, challenging your own beliefs, or two, going, wow, I have really no idea about this, and having a completely objective mind. Mm. So whilst I was contradictory in those statements, I think most people would fall into one of the two categories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, for me personally, it was really interesting because going to a Catholic school, there was no discussion around sexual health. There was a little bit about this is what will happen if you decide you want to have a baby.
If you meet the right
man,
your
husband.
Get married, yeah.
Yeah, when you meet the right man, and very heteronormative but very limited. Hmm. So it was eye-opening in that sense. And I guess what I really like about the work now is the opportunity to have those sort of open and upfront discussions, not only with young people and community, but with my friends as well, because it's something that I didn't really get to do when I was young. And
That background in dealing with such a diverse group of people and sort of at the pointy end, perhaps, of sexual health would stand you well for the work in the cultural diversities in the Western area.
Most definitely, yeah. And, you know, yeah, so many complexities around culture and religion, and I helped to facilitate a sexual health program in an English language school. So it's with newly arrived migrant and refugee young men and women. And, yeah, sort of the sensitivities that we have to go through with that, and also being mindful that not everyone has the same sort of baseline knowledge and understanding. So you're really starting from scratch, which is really interesting.
Well, when we come back, we're actually going to talk about the project that we've got Elise on for tonight.
Joy 94.9.
And this is Well on Joy 94.9. So, Elise, the reason that we have you on tonight is to chat about the Condom Vending Machine Project.
Yes.
So tell the listener a little bit about that project and what it is.
Sure. Well, I'll tell you what it isn't. When I first started, I sort of imagined, okay, I'm going to be helping local government in the West roll out these giant glass vending machines that will have Coke and condoms. Actually, no, they're completely opposite. They're quite discreet and they're quite little. But the Condom Vending Machine Project is part of Action for Equity. It's one of the many strategies that we have that is trying to, I guess, redress some of the issues that we're seeing in the West around rising rates of STIs and teenage pregnancy. We work really closely with local government in the West on this initiative. And, yeah, we're currently rolling out condom vending machines across a range of different settings in the West. And the aim of them really is to be affordable, to be accessible, and to be discreet. And I guess part of that as well is normalising the discussions around accessing condoms and using condoms and having these discussions openly.
So when you say discreet, going to your local supermarket, which has condoms for sale all over the place, that's not enough? Not good enough for some people?
I think for a lot of people, the process of going into a pharmacy, going into a supermarket is really daunting.
Well, price check, well, price like, check, large condoms.
That's it. Well, it's daunting full stop, but when it comes to condoms, even more so. Particularly for young people as well. And if you live in a small city, you know, there's a good chance your auntie will be there buying her groceries. Mm. And if we can avoid those discussions, and if that's enough to put someone off using a condom, well, we don't want that.
And so there's consequences for not using it. Yeah.
Of course, yeah. So we're wanting to make it as accessible and easy for community.
What are some of the locations or discreet locations that these can be found?
Yeah, so I mean, when I say discreet, I also sort of think of non-conventional locations. So libraries.
That's non-conventional.
So is it like a Pokemon Go?
We actually did a social media little campaign around Pokemon Go. We'll get to that later. Libraries, leisure centres, youth services, toilets in a public park as well. So, yeah, not your sort of regular setting. And
so how did the project come about? Obviously, you were saying that sort of to curtail increasing STI rates and I guess was it an increase in pregnancy rates as well, or was this sort of specifically focused around epidemiological evidence saying men who have sex with men in the West have higher rates of STIs comparable to heterosexuals?
Sure. So for this particular project, we're hoping to work with three key population groups. A lot of the work that we've done so far has been with young people. We're also wanting to try and reach men who have sex with men. And we're also wanting to do some work down the track with street-based sex workers. So, yeah, it all sort of came about through a clear identified need from the data that there are higher rates of STIs, such as chlamydia, in the West. And rates of teenage pregnancy are significantly higher in the West compared to the state average. In certain parts of the West, it's 2 times that of the state average. So the evidence is there. Something needs to be done. And we know sort of historically and internationally that condom vending machines have been used for a long time to try and tackle this in conjunction with education programs as well. So it's not a new idea. But it's certainly something that hadn't been done here, well, in the West. Mm. So, yeah, we're sort of looking at the local need, but also looking at what has worked well internationally.
So do you go out to a leisure centre or a library and then start negotiating, we would like you to put or consider putting a condom machine in the toilets?
Yeah, so...
And women's and men's toilets, both toilets?
Yes, So... We work with local government on this project. They're our main partner, and all of the local governments involved in this are involved in Action for Equity, I guess at a senior level. So there's a commitment from them on the strategy. And we sort of did some groundwork, some background work, and said, look, this is what we may recommend in terms of location in your local area. But at the end of the day, it was up to council as to where they put the machines and to how much the condoms were. Our role, I guess, is helping to facilitate those discussions, but also helping with social marketing and particularly social media stuff, promoting the machines.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of atypical librarian finding out that there's a condom vending machine behind the periodicals.
You probably made their day.
Well, you never know.
Joy 94.9.
This is Well on Joy 94.9. So in terms of the local council being on board, which is great, huge supporter, great advocate, how did the community respond, or what was their level of involvement? Because some people who are taking young children to the library might not want to see a condom vending machine
yes.
in those spaces. So how did you negotiate with that?
Sure. So for each one of our partners, it was quite different, the whole process of coming up with the location and coming up with sort of a plan. Ultimately, as I said before, the decision on where the machines were was up to council. And I think that's great because they have that nuanced understanding of their community compared to us. In terms of getting the community involved, for a couple of the councils, it was just sort of a higher management decision at council. Like, let's just go with this. We know that there are lots of young people, for example, that come through. For some of the other councils, there was actually consultation that happened with community. So one of our councils spoke with young service users. They spoke to about 90 young people that came through their service and sort of said to them, this is what we're thinking of doing. How can we make this accessible and, you know, exciting for you?
Are you going to use it if we come up with an idea? What do you want?
You know,
what
we're investing in this. Is it going to be worth it? And overwhelmingly, young people were very, very supportive. They said, yes, this is what we want. This is what we need. Thank you. We will use them, providing it's discreet and providing it's cheap. So this particular council then went on to subsidise the cost of their condoms based on that feedback. But in terms of, you know, negative feedback or community outcry, we haven't really had that, touch wood. It's been okay. You know, there have been the odd comments here or there about, oh, young children might come across these, you know, discreet silver boxes that don't have much marketing or branding on them. It's like, well, if a three-year-old can read that, then that's a very advanced three-year-old.
Well, I mean, where are they sort of a thing? Because as you said, if it's just kind of like a silver box and it is discreet because that's what I guess the young people wanted or people that were going to access them.
Yep.
Without sort of saying condoms located here.
Yeah. There's no neon like arrows pointing
to
them yet.
Where kind of are they? I mean, are there 20 silver boxes in the western suburbs or are there five? Like how
your quest, Adam, is to go and find all of them. You have to come out to the west. we've got 10 at the moment. The city of Melton has 6 of the 10 at the moment, and they're located at Caroline Springs Leisure Centre, at Hanawatts Park, and the Melton Library as well. And I think a real credit to Melton was the decision to put them in the Leisure Centre in particular. Those machines have been doing really well. And I think that's because there are so many people coming through that service all day, every day. It's in the heart of Caroline Springs. There's, you know, group fitness happening in that centre. There's a basketball court. There's cricket pitch and a footy ground out the back. It's open after hours. So there are people coming through. In regards to what they look like, so, yeah, the feedback from most people was keep it discreet. We'll know what it is. But then we've done some more consultation recently and a few people have said, actually, if you're wanting to normalise the use of condoms in these discussions, don't hide it. So we're like, okay, back to the drawing board. But we're hoping to work with some young people and some artists to maybe get some artwork on the machines. And our other sites, I should not forget them. We've got in Maribyrnong, 2 machines at Phoenix Youth Centre in Footscray and at Brimbank at the Visi Cares Hub, which Brimbank Youth Services is located there. But they also see a lot of disengaged young people coming through that service. So a lot of the sites to date have really sort of tried to focus on young people. But as I said before, we're wanting to do more with men who have sex with men and with street-based sex workers down the track as well.
When did they actually get installed? How long have they been in situ, as they say?
Yeah, well, it's been staggered. So we just wrapped up the pilot for this. We've got another year on it. But the first lot of machines were installed in Maribyrnong. Congratulations, Maribyrnong, being number one. That was in June of 2015.
Okay, so it's, yeah.
Yeah, so it's been... So the groundwork sort of started in 2012. In 2014. It's been about 18 months since the first one went in, and the hope is that we'll have more installed within the next 12 months.
And so what's the cost of the condoms? I mean, does every council sort of choose differently, or does every site choose differently, or is it kind of like hey, the SES of this level is here, so it's $5 a condom, whereas over here it's a little bit lower, so it's $1 a condom.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's a bit of difference, not only for each local government area, but for the site, so you are correct. As I said before, Brimbank consulted with their service users and subsidised the cost of their condoms. So a single pack is 20 cents.
Oh, and wow.
That's a bargain.
That's a bargain.
And a pack of three is a dollar. So if you do the math there, it kind of seems a bit off. But the 20-cent packet is heavily subsidised, basically.
Mm, yeah.
And then the other sites are around $1 for a pack of two. Which, you know, if you compare that to buying, you know, a 12-pack or whatever, it's kind of similar, but you're taking away that embarrassment, that awkwardness of going into the supermarket.
And so how do you... Do you go out and fill them? Like, or do you... Is there like a little...
The machines.
A thing that ticks off that says, oh, we're nearly out of condoms. Like, come and check us now. Yeah. Or are there people at the sites that actually sort of facilitate that for you?
Yeah. So, again, all the sites are different. The councils had the option of renting their machines. So, by renting, they pay, I guess, a flat fee every month and somebody will come out and restock and service the machines. And they also send all of the sales data to Women's Health West. And we sort of do a lot of the reporting on the figures. A few of the councils opted to buy the machines, and what that means is that the responsibility sits with them for restocking, you know, checking for damage, checking that all of the promotional materials are still up, and then sending the sales data to Women's Health West every month. Yes.
Like, well, I guess we're going to just listen to a quick song, but when we come back, we're going to talk about where they are. Exactly. So where people can go and find them in terms of if you didn't have your pen and your paper then, whereabouts on the Women's Health West website that you can actually locate them? And also, how's the project going evidence-based wise and have you seen a difference?
Joy 94.9.
This is Well on Joy 94.9. Now, Elise, we're talking about the fact that the project's been going for about, or you've been in the role for about 15 months and it's kind of been going since, I think it was June of last year?
Yes.
So how do we know it's having an impact? Is it just because the condoms are going? Do we know they're going to the right people, or has there been any sort of evaluation done on the impact and the outcomes?
Yeah. Well, as someone with a research background, I can appreciate that. Thank you, Adam. So we recently wrapped up the pilot for this project. So we've still got another 12 months, but we wanted to sort of test the waters first with a pilot and just sort of see how we go. And a few of our other partners had said, oh, look, we'll hold off and see what sort of results you get from the pilot. So finished that reporting. Overall, quite positive, quite good results. Over the 12-month period, we sold just under 1,500 condoms across the 10 sites. Some a bit more popular than others, and I think that that's really useful information for new councils going forward to sort of say, hey, look, this site's done particularly well. We think it's because of X, Y, Z. And also for the current partners to, you know, potentially reevaluate their locations down the track. In addition to, you know, the sales data, I don't think I can really answer if the condoms are going to the right people. We know that they're going, and that's good. Even if it's just, you know, a couple of young guys having a bit of a laugh and picking them up and playing with them. Like, as silly as that sounds, if it's making people, you know, become more familiar with condoms, I think that's great. In terms of our social marketing, so over the last 12 months, we've had a couple of social media campaigns that have done pretty well. We launched our hashtag Safe Sex in the West campaign during that time. And during Sexual Health Awareness Week, we had some stuff online, which sort of sat with the themes of respect, consent, choice, and pleasure. So we shared a whole bunch of, you know, YouTube clips and infographics and content to try and get people talking about sexual health, but to also let them know where the machines were and where they could access the condoms. We've also done a little bit of marketing via some dating apps. We've done a little bit on Grindr and a bit on Squirt. And that was surprisingly well, considering we really didn't spend that much. We had some good outcomes with that. So we're hoping to do a bit more of that this year. But yeah, I think overall the results have been great. I just received the new lot of sales data that we got for November and December, and it's the highest sales we've had for the whole period, which for me is
getting
is
to
quite
the warmer
great.
Months. People
That's
are getting
it.
A little bit more frisky.
People
end
are
of the
out
year.
And about, and summer is a great opportunity to promote. You know, we've got university O weeks coming up. We've got midsummer happening. People are out and about, and I think people are hopefully starting to recognise the project now that it's been, yeah, about the 15 months or whatever. So, yeah, we'll just sort of keep doing what we're doing and hopefully get some more partners on board and get some more machines out there.
And so for the people that wanted the list of actually where they're located out in the West, where would they go to find that specific list?
Sure. So they can jump on our website at whwest.org.au/safesexinthewest. That has a list of all the locations and a bit of the background info as to why we're doing this project. And if you jump on Facebook and search for the hashtag #SafeSexInTheWest, you'll also see all of the posts associated with the project, and you'll be able to find some material online.
Fantastic. Well, Elise, thanks very much for coming in. It's
good work.
Quite interesting. Yeah, it's something very novel and something that we don't really sort of consider, having condoms available in other locations that are not pharmacies, that are not service stations, that sort of attitudinal sort of trying to reconstruct it in a way to make it normal,
That's
to make it.
It
fun and make it exciting. Like, sex is fun and pleasurable. People want to have sex. Make condoms available.
That's exactly
right.
In many
ways, many different
ways. Yeah, it's about normalising the discussions and, you know, trying to break down that stigma that shouldn't exist anymore. Like,
exactly.
Come on, people. But yeah, we'll get there. And I just want to say, if I offended anybody before by saying that teaching was a backup option, that is not the case. I almost became a teacher, so I apologise to those people if they're out there.
You had the vocation for teaching, yeah.
Maybe one day.
Exactly.
No, I'm quite happy where I am now.
Well, this is Well on Joy 94.9. Thank you very much, Lise.
Y-Gender is a support and advocacy group for trans and gender diverse people aged 25 and under. We run regular events and work to combat transphobia. For more information on our events and services, email info@ygender.org.au or check out our website, ygender.org.au. Joy 94.9 is proud to share this community service message for Y-Gender.
A community message supported by Joy.
Joy 94.9.
And this is Well on Joy 94.9. Jack, can you believe that we've come to the end of another show?
Look, time goes nowhere. That's my life. That's our lives slipping by.
One moment at a time.
That's right. But so, it's amazing.
Well, exactly. But one thing that we do have to spruik before we head off is that tomorrow night is Vax Hypothetical, the 2017 Hypothetical, Who Killed Sharon Swallows?
Who Killed Sharon Swallows is a very good name.
It is a very good name. But unfortunately, the Hypothetical has sold out. It's a free event. We run it every year. We've run it for the past couple of years at Fed Square at
Deakin Edge.
Deakin Edge.
Used to be BMW, now it's Deakin.
Yep, absolutely Edge. Fantastic. But the one great thing that we're doing this year is it's actually two great things. One is actually we're live streaming out on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/VAC. And then the other one is that we're actually doing it on Bent TV.
How's that?
They're going to broadcast it.
Live to air.
Absolutely. So there's a couple of different ways that you can watch that if you're interested in coming along or participating, I should say.
Yeah, and it'll be very good because there's a very good panel. It's, you know, social, ethical, moral, perhaps, you know, medical.
Well, controversial, issues. I would like to say.
And challenging at times, all through the prism of a little bit of humour.
Exactly, exactly. And another thing we've got coming up is Queer Arse Trivia.
We have, and that's at Where's the Trier Arse? Sorry, Queer Arse Trivia.
Queer Arse Trivia is being held at Hares and Hyenas on Monday the 23rd of January, so that's next Monday at 7:30, with all the proceeds going to the Hair Hole, which is kind of like the social group at Hares and Hyenas, and it's a really great cause, so we want you to come along. It's fun, games, questions, live performances.
Absolutely. But also,
bunch of stuff.
Just before we go quickly, on the 31st of January 1st and 2nd of February is Stigma at La Mama. Stigma is a presentation, a dance and movement with narratives portraying the issues for people living with HIV and the issue of stigma, but also for the drag lovers, What a Drag, Rhubarb Rouge and her gaggle of merry people doing a show at Chapel on Chapel on, I think it's the 2nd, did I say?
I think it's the 3rd.
Third
I think
of
it's
February.
The 3rd. You might
third
fi- of February. I think you might find it's the 3rd.
Okay, so check out Chapel on Chapel for What a Drag.
Well, absolutely.
I free. Mean, it's free, but just gold coin donation.
We've got all of these events coming up, and Midsummer is just such a huge time to try and fit everything in. But if you want to see anything that we're involved with in terms of VAC either being a supporter of a specific event or putting on a specific event, you can check out vac.org.au and yes. go to our events page, go to the calendar and have a look at everything that we've got, because we've got Belonging, there's Mooning, there's this, there's that, there's
exactly.
four things that we just mentioned. So,
and there's also the gay community periodic survey to do too.
Oh Lord, so many things, but this has been well for another week. We'll see you next week.
And up next is Sonia with Broad.
Absolutely. Bye.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.